All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate on the search relations team here at Google. And part of what we do are these office hour sessions where people can jump in and ask their questions around SEO and their website. And we can try to find some answers. As always, a bunch of questions were submitted on YouTube already. So we have some of those to go through, but we also have lots of new live people here. So maybe we'll go through some of the live questions first. And sure, then let's get started. Let's see. Christian, I think you're first.
Hi, John. How are you? So nice to see you again. I've got a question regarding Core Web Vitals. I would like to know if the weight of the Core Web Vitals or the page experience can depend on the kind of the website you are looking at. So let's say you have a website which is more sensitive to loading time, like online gaming or something in that direction. Versus some plain text website. Are there any differences in the weighting of the page experience or Core Web Vitals as a ranking factor?
No, not really. So it's not that we would evaluate the kind of website and say, oh, speed is more important here. It's really like if we can take it into account, we'll take it into account. I think the tricky part is in some search results, the competition is quite strong and everyone is very like similarly strong, and then it can look like it has a stronger weight, but it's not the case that we look at it kind of like by type of website and say, oh, it's more important here or not.
All right, good to know. Thank you.
Sure. All right, Andrew.
Yes, hello, John.
Hi.
So we are trying to improve page experience on one of our websites. Currently, we are working on a CLS metric. So the background of the problem is that the images on our website use lazy load, but before loading, we don't know their sizes. So we put an empty SVG in the SRC attribute with the viewport meta tag, and the original image is in the data SRC. And once the image in the on the screen, we replace SRC attribute with the original image. It is the same setup that is recommended in their article on web.dev, but we use the data SRC instead of the data source set is an example. And we also switch an image with an image in the SRC. Is this setup okay for Google in terms of indexing images on such pages? I mean, this sounds, switching thing.
Yeah. That sounds okay. I think for the Core Web Vital side, the CLS side, that's something you can test where you try it in one way or the other way. With regards to indexing, what is important is that we have information about the images on those pages. So what you can do if you're not sure if your lazy loading is recognized by Google is use the image structured data. So kind of on the pages themselves, give us the structured data for those images, and then we can definitely pick that up.
Okay, and in such setup, does Google or the algorithm understand that there is a meaningful, possibly even useful image and not just a gray square?
I don't think we care.
To
be quite honest. So I don't think for web search, we look at the specific images on the page and say, oh, this is a nice image and this is a boring image. We basically use those images in image search, and that's where we care what the content of the images are. But within web search, we don't really care if it's a gray square or if it's a picture of a beach.
Okay. And also, I wanted to ask, is it okay in general not to use the SRC at all and instead use only the data SRC attribute? Do you like recognize and well, not recognize, but use this attribute for indexing pages or images?
I don't think we use it by default, but if it loads with lazy loading as an image element on the page, then we can pick that up. And if you use the structured data or an image sitemap, we can also pick that up. So it's not by default that you would use the data SRC, but we use what ends up being rendered on the page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, OK. Thank you.
Sure. GK, I think.
Hi, John. I have a question about reputation research. Does Google collect Android and iOS application reviews in the process of extensive reputation research? This type of reviews will affect our company website quality scores?
I don't think so. At least for web search, I don't think we would take that into account. And we don't have kind of a notion of a quality score when it comes to web search anyway. So I could imagine that indirectly, if these reviews are published on the web somewhere, we might pick them up and we might index them. But if they're like in app store somewhere, I don't think we even see them for web search. Like for other kinds of searches, I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
John, may I add something to this question?
Sure.
If you don't mind, of course. Yeah, I also don't think that Google is able to see these stores because they are kind of closed ecosystems, especially the App Store. So if you don't have an account, you cannot access them, in other words. So it's almost the same like with the websites. If you have something that is locked with user and passwords, it's not possible to be publicly accessed by a software like the crawler in this situation.
Yeah, that might be. I don't actually know the details of how the web, kind of the Play Store or the App Store content is shown or accessible in search. But yeah, that might also be the case. Cool. Let's see, Hazel.
Hi, John. Nice to have you here. So my first question is, recently the crawl request on my company site has dropped like nearly over 90%, and we have checked all aspects according to the Google official doc, like robots, text, or CDNs, and we want to know any other possible technical factors that can cause a sudden drop of crawl request in a day. What main aspects do you recommend us to also check?
So it sounds to me like our systems have trouble accessing your content quickly enough. So when it comes to the number of requests that we make on a website, we have two kind of things that we balance. On the one hand, the crawl demand, which is how much we want to crawl from a website. And assuming this is a reasonable website, then the crawl demand usually stays pretty stable. It can go up if we see a lot of new content. It can go down if we see like very little content. But usually, these changes are very kind of slow over time. And the other side is the crawl capacity. This is how much we think the server can support from crawling without causing any problems. And this is something that we evaluate on a daily basis. And it can react quite quickly if we think that there's a critical problem on the website. So for critical problems, we think of things like server errors. If we see a lot of server errors, if we can't access the website properly, if the server speed goes down significantly, so not the time to render a page, but the time to access the HTML files directly. And those are kind of the three aspects that play into that. If, for example, the speed goes down significantly, you would see that in the crawl stats report in Search Console. That's something where, like, if we think we cause problems, from crawling too much, we will scale that back fairly quickly.
Oh, I see. So the response time is highly relevant with highly related with the crawl request, right?
Yes.
Crawl rate, yes. Also. Yeah. Do you think the response codes of huge 5xx and 4xx also may reduce the crawl rate?
5xx errors, definitely. Those are server errors, which we would see as being potentially problematic. 400 mm-hmm. errors are less problematic because it's basically content doesn't exist, so we can crawl normally. So mm-hmm. if a page disappears, that's no problem. If it has a server error, that is a problem.
So how many levels of 5xx code would you see it as a admin cause a server error? Like if we have 100 pages and maybe among 15 pages returns to 5xx due to some technical errors, will Google bot think our server may overload? Like how many percent would make?
I don't think we have a fixed number. So mm-hmm. what I would check, if this recently dropped the speed, I would go into Search Console and the crawl stats section and mm-hmm. see if one of those numbers there changed significantly. Like it will have the graph, and then you can see like on this date we saw the change, and did the 5xx errors go up or go down, or is the speed kind of too changing there, anything like that.
Oh, I see. So if assuming that we find the critical problem and we maybe it was because of our response time or maybe the server error, if we fix this problem like maybe in 1 or 2 weeks, when will we see the crawl rate back to the normal request? Like
we update the crawl rate on a daily basis. So mm-hmm. probably within a couple of days, you will see like step by step it increasing again.
So maybe if we fix it in the right direction, we can see it increase. Okay,
yes.
I see. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Alessio.
Hey, hi John. How are you?
Hi. Pretty good.
I don't know if you remember, I joined the office hour session like a few weeks ago, and I asked you about some SOC 404. I sent you a couple of examples, and you said you would send them over to the team to check what the problem exactly was, because as I described back then in the URL inspection tool, will show us that everything was pretty much there, and then you said maybe there is an issue on our side. I don't know if you recall that. Just want to follow up.
It's possible. I don't have kind of offhand the escalations that we did there. I don't know. I think if you posted the URLs, then I definitely passed them on to your team. But I don't know if like what changes they would make based on that.
Is there a way to understand if the issue is on our side or on your side? Because obviously, if it's on your side, we don't have to worry about that. But if there is something we are doing wrong, we would like to fix it. At the moment, for us, it's a bit difficult to understand what we are doing wrong.
Yeah. So, usually, with soft 404s, it's based on the content that we find on the website.
Yeah.
So if we see things like an error page on a website, or if we see, I don't know, no index pages or something that mentions errors in the text on the page, then that's something we could potentially classify as a soft 404. So I don't remember the actual URLs that you had, so it's really hard for me to say. But I imagine these are normal pages on your side. Then that would probably be something that just our systems have to pick up over time. And with the escalations that I do for the soft 404 team, usually they take that into account for future algorithm updates.
Okay.
So it's not that they would manually tweak it and say, oh, it's just, this one is not. but rather they fix the code and improve it so that it doesn't catch those kind of pages.
Because the strange thing is that a few days after I spoke to you, I saw the number of software fall going down. Then a week later, it went up again. So it was curious to see that.
Yeah. I don't think you would see those changes that quickly because
that's why.
Algorithm changes, they take a bit of time.
Okay, perfect. Got it. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Sure. Philip.
Hey, John.
Hi.
All right. I've got a question on query strings and facet navigation, how to deal with this. So we've got our site. We load our faceted nav on our category pages with JavaScript. There's no href links on them, so Google's not going to find those. And we don't want those indexed either. So the way we kind of have it set up, the only way these kind of seem to be accessible to Google is if someone externally links to them. And so to prevent that indexation, we've got Canonical set up. We decided not to do it through robots.txt. But you know, I was thinking about this, and I know the Canonicals is more of a suggestion. So I get a little paranoid sometimes. I'm like, I don't want all these things to get indexed and stuff like that. So then I started kind of thinking about the Search Console parameter tool. So I started kind of poking around there. And that seems, if I block those parameters, is that really essentially the same thing as blocking with like robots.txt, and then the Canonicals wouldn't get seen? I guess that's question number one.
So we use that tool as a way of recognizing pages that we shouldn't index and for picking better canonical choices. So basically what would happen there is if we've never seen that page before, then like nothing will get indexed anyway. If we've seen that page before and we've noticed it has a rel canonical on it and we're unsure like what we should do with this rel canonical because it's not a 100% clear signal, then having it listed in that tool basically skews that discussion and basically says, oh, like we don't want this index, then we just won't index that. And we've seen a rel canonical here, so we'll just follow that rel canonical.
Okay. So it will still crawl it. It wouldn't act similar to the robots.
Yeah. Usually what happens is the crawling still happens, but it doesn't happen at the same speed. Because we like recognize ahead of time that actually this is probably not something that we need.
Okay. That makes sense. Because then that kind of takes care of the next question, because then I was thinking about, because they had there's the options if it's just tracking based or if it actually like changes the page. And the tracking one allows you to kind of follow, only the representative URL, which in my head I was like, oh yeah, that sounds great. But I guess if the other one does the same thing, then we're kosher.
Yeah. I think using the blocking setting makes a lot of sense there.
All right, great. Thanks, John.
All right. Let me run through some of the submitted questions, and I'll get back to the rest of you with your raised hands as well. Don't worry. And probably have some time afterwards as well for more questions if needed. Let's see. The first question I have on the list here is, in Search Console, we can see for a keyword, after we have filtered the country, that every month on the 27th, there's an impression increase by 300%. There are no clicks at these time periods when the posting is always close to one. I wanted to ask whether bots can trigger such impressions, and what should we do about it? It can definitely be the case that bots or scrapers or things like that are triggering these impressions. We filter and block bots at different levels in the search results. And it can certainly happen that some of these go through into Search Console as well. So it's almost like a weird situation that if you're running these scrapers to see what your position or ranking would be on these pages, then you're kind of getting some metrics, but you're skewing the other metrics. So it's something where, on the one hand, from our terms of service, you shouldn't be scraping our search results. And of course, others shouldn't be either. So I kind of discourage that if you're checking these things yourself. If this is not something that you're running and you just see this appearing in Search Console, it's fine to flag this with the feedback function, which it sounds like you already did. And it's fine also to completely ignore it, because it's something where, like I said, we filter at different positions in our search systems. And all of the ones that I've escalated, which were like this, ended up being filtered just a little bit after a Search Console. So it's not that it causes any problems. It does make it harder to track impressions, and you can't filter them out in Search Console. So it's kind of annoying, but it's not something that you can manually tweak yourself. Let's see. My question is related to internal links, specifically on the homepage. Assuming the homepage got a certain value, will having lots of internal links going from the homepage to other pages affect the value of the homepage, therefore affecting its performance and ability to rank for a specific query? Interesting question. So basically, what you're doing with the internal linking is spreading the value that you're getting from your pages relative to the rest of your website. So if, for example, like all of the external links go to your homepage, and that's where all of the signals get collected, and your homepage has absolutely no links, then we can focus purely on the homepage. As soon as it has other links as well, then we kind of distribute that out across all of these links. And depending on the way that you have your internal linking set up, that can mean that there are certain places within your website that are, relatively speaking, more important based on your internal linking structure. And that's kind of how we pick things up. So it's not a one-to-one a mapping of your internal linking to your ranking, but it does give us a sense of relative importance within your website. And from that point of view, it definitely makes sense to link to important and new things from your homepage, where you're saying, this is really important, or this is really new, people should take notice of this. Then we can pick that up a little bit faster, and we can give it a little bit more weight in the search results as well. It doesn't automatically mean it will rank better, but it does mean that we kind of recognize, oh, you're saying this is relatively important. So we will kind of take that on as feedback and try to treat it appropriately. Let's see, several questions we would like to know more about. What's the possible technical factors that can cause a sudden drop of crawl requests in a day? I think we touched upon this fairly briefly before. The response time, like I mentioned, and the frequency for Google to recalculate the crawl budget, that's essentially once a day we try to look at that. Also, in Search Console, if you're seeing that we're crawling too much, which doesn't sound like this problem, but if you're seeing that and you adjust the maximum crawl rate in Search Console, that's also taken into account about once a day. So that once a day factor is kind of at play there. I know it has been mentioned before that making technical improvements is less important to SEO than having quality content. I just want to pause there and say, I don't think this is absolutely true. It's something where both the technical side of SEO and the content side of SEO, they're very important. And they play a big role in how search engines understand your content. And I would not say that technical SEO is less important than the quality side. I think they both have to be good. And the other thing I just want to mention while I'm here is that when it comes to the quality of the content, we don't mean like just the text of your articles. It's really the quality of your overall website. And that includes everything from the layout to the design, like how you have things presented on your pages, how you integrate images, how you work with speed, all of those factors, they kind of come into play there. So it's not the case that we would look at just purely the text of the article and ignore everything else around it and say, oh, this is high quality text. We really want to look at the website overall. So I think that's even like before all of your questions. So I hope it doesn't ruin the rest. Let's see. With that in mind, is there a point where technical improvements are still extremely valuable? Yes. Like I mentioned, it's definitely still important. Maybe just an aside here. I suspect some of this came from a discussion we had in one of the previous Hangouts where someone had an issue with regards to a core ranking change that Google made, and they saw their website drop in rankings. And that was a case where I'd say probably those technical issues are not the reason for a drop of a website when it comes to core ranking changes, because those core ranking changes are really about relevance more, and they're less about kind of the technical factors. But in general, technical SEO is just as important as content, and they both have to work together. Let's see. The question goes on. When LCP is over 20 seconds and blocking time over 10 seconds, or are there some more general guidelines? So that, I think, is specific to the page experience ranking change that we made. And those numbers sound pretty bad, and it sounds like a pretty slow page. So that's definitely something I would work on to improve. I think if you want to pick apart the individual factors of how a page is ranking, then you can't just blindly isolate one element there, which in this case would be speed or the page experience ranking factor, and say, I will fix this one issue, and then the ranking will improve. Because maybe the ranking is stuck because of this one issue. Maybe the ranking is stuck because of 500 other issues that you have on a website. So that's something where you can't just blindly isolate that. I've been treating improvements that cut off about half a second or more LCP as valuable, and we've seen jumps in organic traffic corresponding to the weeks we've made these improvements. But we're not certain that these increases are tied to the changes, and we're nearing a point where it seems that we may be better served working on something else. Yeah, but like I mentioned, it's hard to say if it's really specific to this one change. One thing maybe worth mentioning specifically about speed is that for the Core Web Vitals, we take into account the data that is, I think, delayed by 28 days or something like that, so about a month back, which means if you make significant speed changes on your website that affect the Core Web Vitals and accordingly the page experience ranking factor, then I would expect it to take about a month to be visible in the search results. So if you're seeing changes in search that happen like on the next day, then probably that wouldn't be related to the speed changes that you made. And similarly, if you make bigger speed changes, then you need to take into account that it's going to take about a month before you even see any effects from that. Yeah, I think it's also one of the hardest parts of SEO is finding out which parts of kind of this big catalog of SEO things that you could be doing are currently the most critical for a website. And that's something where experience comes into play, and understanding kind of the competitive environment there, the queries that you're trying to rank for comes into play. And there's no tool that will just go out and say, it's like, here are 500 things that are wrong, and this is the one thing that you should be doing. That's kind of, I think, the exciting part of SEO is you kind of gain some experience over the years to figure that out. I'll be adding structured data on a page that has a product, its reviews, and FAQs related to the product. Doesn't matter if the FAQs are not nested, but the script is still included in the page header. I think that's fine. I would use the appropriate structured data testing tools just to make sure that you can pull out that data. From what I understand from the structured data guidelines for those elements, these don't necessarily have to be nested. So that's probably OK. But you can test with the testing tools. The testing tools essentially do what we would use for indexing, and they'll tell you right away if it's good or not. Does a website which includes great content improve in trust with Google, or is that only determined through links? I don't think we have like a trust factor that we can kind of look at and say, oh, trust is at, I don't know, 9 out of 12 or whatever numbers you would have there. So that's kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a philosophical question at that point. It's like, does improving the quality of your content overall make a website more trustworthy with regards to Google? And it's like, well, I don't know. There are no metrics specifically for that. I think improving the quality of your content is always a good idea, but it's, yeah, I don't know. Lots of things are involved there. And when it comes to trust, it's definitely not a matter of just links that are pointing at a website. Would delaying loading of non-critical JavaScript until the first user interaction affect SEO ranking in any way? This will not affect UX and UI. Is there anything we should be concerned about, such as affecting the Chrome user experience report data? So I think from what I understand from the question, it's basically your lazy loading the functionality that takes place when a user starts to interact with a page, and not lazy loading the actual content. If that's the case, then that sounds perfectly fine to me. That's something similar to, I believe they call it hydration, when it comes to JavaScript-based sites, where you essentially load the content from HTML as a static HTML page, and then you add the JavaScript functionality on top of that. From our point of view, if the content is visible for indexing, then we can take that into account, and we can just use that. It's not the case that Googlebot will go off and click on different things. We essentially just need the content to be there. The one thing where kind of clicking on different things might come into play is with regards to links on a page. If those links are not loaded as A elements, then we won't be able to recognize those as being links. And similarly, as one of the questions I think early on was with regards to lazy loading of images on a page, if those images are not loaded as image elements, then we don't recognize them as image elements for image search. And then it's good to have kind of a backup in the form of structured data or an image sitemap on your file so that we can understand that even if those images are currently not loaded on the page, they should be associated with that page. I think you have your hand raised as well. So I just wanted to check, does that work for you?
It does, yes. Thank you for answering that. I only want to add, first of all, yeah, the A's, so the links are there, so we're good with that. And what we're trying to address here is the page speed, which we're using this CDN, which does this part of the lazy loading, let's say JS and CSS. So yes, we're trying to increase the speed. This did increase the web vitals as well by like a lot. More than 50%. So I don't know if such a big change will affect us in any way, in a bad way. Is this considered, I mean, lazy loading CSS a bad practice, or is there anything on that?
I think that's perfectly fine to do like that. With regards to CSS in particular, so I don't know, JavaScript probably less so, but CSS in particular, since it affects the layout of the page, that could affect the CLS score. And it could affect the understanding of whether or not a page is mobile friendly. So that might be something to watch out for. But otherwise, if you're using lazy loading and you're making your pages much faster for users, then it's like, good job. Yeah, that sounds good.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Let's see. My client is having a rather unique issue that is relevant to the times. Ordinarily, I would recommend that if a product is out of season or out of stock, that they keep the URL live and put a note to the user as to when the product will be available. With supply chain shortages, this company is experiencing an inordinate amount of temporarily out of stock products, and this creates a negative user experience. How do we balance the user experience with SEO? They want to take all the URLs offline so that customers stop complaining about the number of out-of-stock items on the e-commerce site. However, this means their URLs and SEO is impacted. I don't know. I think this is always a bit challenging, specifically around out-of-stock and temporarily out-of-stock content. It is something where what works best for us is if we can keep the URL online for things that are really temporary, in the sense that if the URL remains indexable and with structured data you tell us this product is currently not available, then we can at least kind of like keep this URL in our index and keep refreshing it regularly to pick up that change in availability as quickly as possible. However, if you decide to no index these pages, or if you decide to just remove the internal linking to these pages, then when that state changes back, we would try to pick that up fairly quickly as well. And we try to understand these state changes through things like sitemaps and internal links. So especially if you add a product back and then suddenly it has internal links again, that helps us to pick that up again. You can speed this up a little bit by being a bit deliberate with your internal linking. So in particular, like I think one of the questions earlier, where when things are linked from the home page, we think that they're a little bit more important, and we go off and try them out fairly quickly. If you add those products back, and if you add a link to your home page saying, oh, these things are now in stock again, then we can take that and say, oh, this seems to be an important thing. We will double check these pages a bit quicker, and we'll see if they're actually now in stock or not. So that's kind of the direction I would go there. I think also with regards to in stock and not in stock, especially when it comes to products, one thing you can also do is kind of hedge your SEO together with product search. So if you submit a Merchant Center feed, then we can also show those products within the, I don't know what it's called, the product search sidebar thing, or product listing ads, I think it used to be called. I don't know what the current name is. We can also show those products there. And we can show them there based on the feed. So we don't necessarily need to recrawl the individual pages to recognize, oh, the page says it's in stock. We can just recognize in the feed that you submit to us, like suddenly the availability changed. We can put that back in. So those are kind of the aspects there. On the one hand, if you want to remove it with a no index or just removing internal links, that's fine. That's up to you. If you change it back, make sure to make it so that we recognize those changes as quickly as possible. And ideally, also use the Merchant Center feed to kind of hedge your bets with regards to SEO so that it doesn't depend purely on recrawling all of these pages. After doing a Lighthouse report on our site, we noticed a common JavaScript library we use was flagged as having two security vulnerabilities. Do these vulnerabilities have any effect on SEO? Or would you say this is more just to let us know? So Lighthouse is, I think, a tool within Chrome and also a standalone tool, I think. Not sure if it's just in Chrome. But it's basically from the Chrome side. It's not by definition an SEO tool, but it does have a lot of things that you can use for SEO. And specifically, security vulnerabilities are not something that we would flag as an SEO issue. But if these are real vulnerabilities on scripts that you're using, and that means that your website ends up getting hacked, then the hacked state of your website, that would be a problem for SEO. But just the possibility that it might be hacked, that's not an issue with regards to SEO. So from that point of view, I would take this as something to double check together with maybe developers, or double check if you can update those libraries. But I wouldn't see it as something that will change your rankings immediately. I run a theater news, reviews, and ticket website. Some of the content that's posted is generic from the show's producers. Is it OK to post this on the website with admin as the author? Or is it always best to have a person as the author? So I think this kind of comes from everything around the quality rater guides and information that we've published around EAT, which is expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness. And this basically applies to sites that are really critical, and essentially sites where you're giving medical information or where you're giving financial information. Then for those kind of really critical situations, you want to make sure as a user that this is actually written by someone who's trustworthy or who's an authority on this topic. But when it comes to theater news, for example, or SEO news, or anything kind of random on the web, that's not necessarily something where the trustworthiness of the author is a big issue. So that's something where I would say it's the less critical how you frame this. I think having admin as an author seems kind of, I don't know, too generic with regards to any business, where maybe you're better off just saying, well, there is no author for this specific piece of information, or it's just written by our website. Essentially, that's more up to you. The one place where the author name does come into play is some types of structured data also have kind of information for the author. And in that case, it might be something that is shown in the rich results on a page. So from that point of view, you might want to make sure that at least there's a reasonable name there, or you explicitly don't use that kind of structured data. But otherwise, for, I think, a generic news and reviews and tickets website, I wouldn't necessarily worry about the name of the author that you specify there. Recently, we added post section to the homepage, as most sites have, and that section has been constantly changing. And we don't really want to rank these pages for any specific query, meaning we don't want to favor them in any way. Instead, we want to rank categories and tags. So my question is, will adding a nofollow attribute to these pages in that section cut the internal link juice flow to them? And therefore give more value to the other links on the homepage. So for the most part, I don't think it makes sense to try to fine-tune the internal linking with the rel nofollow attribute on links. I don't think that's something that's very easily, I don't know, even recognizable as having an effect there. So I wouldn't focus on just putting nofollow on these links and putting them there. Either you want to have those pages indexed, in which case you have normal internal links to them, or you don't want them indexed, in which case you don't have internal links to them, or in which case you could just put a no index on those pages. I wouldn't try to tweak things with internal linking of this kind of content with the rel nofollow. So that's something where I would try to figure out on your side, like this is totally up to you, and this is more of a strategic question than an SEO question. It's like, do you want these pages indexed or do you not want them indexed? If you do want them indexed, then like link to them normally and make them indexable. If you don't want them indexed, then don't link to them or put a no index on those pages and decide kind of based on that. Can we add a view of a week and a month in the search report in Search Console? I don't know. I would submit feedback for that so that the Search Console team kind of knows what you would like to do there. One thing you could do is just export the data and do it in a spreadsheet. So that might be an option for you. How does Google search engine differentiate between e-commerce website and informational website? Is it from the plugins installed or from the CMS or from the website structure? We want to use WooCommerce plugin for a specific purpose other than e-commerce. We don't want to sell any products. Will the WooCommerce installation classify our website as an e-commerce website? We don't classify websites based on the infrastructure that they use. I sometimes get this question with regards to blogs. And it's like, I want to publish an article, and I do it in WordPress. Does this mean that Google thinks that my article is a blog post? And it's like, we don't have this notion of trying to understand what type of content something is just based on the infrastructure that it uses. You can use essentially an e-commerce site set up for posting your blog posts if you want to. It's probably not very suitable for things like that, but you could if you wanted to. And if we see that, we will say, well, this page has a lot of content on this specific topic. We will rank this page based on this content. So from that point of view, if you want to use a specific infrastructure which you think works well for your website, then go for it. It's not going to be the case that we will say, oh, your website uses this infrastructure, so it must be this kind of a website. That's not the case. We essentially look at the pages that we see there, and based on the content that we find on those pages, based on that, do we try to classify these individual pages? And even then, it's not the case that we would say, oh, this is an e-commerce page, or this is an article page. But rather, we would try to figure out what intent does this page cover, and how does that map to the search results? Like, if someone is looking to buy something specific, and we see it's a product page, then we might say, well, this covers this kind of like user wants to buy something intent fairly well, therefore we'll rank it. So it's, I don't know, lots of those things kind of flow into that. Let me see. We have lots of raised hands and still a bunch of questions left. Maybe I'll just go back to the raised hands. Adriana, I think you're next.
Hi, John. My question is kind of an elementary one, but it's wildly debated at my agency, and it's about impressions. So can you tell us what classifies an impression in Google Search Console, and then how that might be changing with the infinite scroll?
Okay. There's a lot about that. So what we have a Help Center page on what is impressions, clicks, and positions, I think it's roughly called, that has a ton of details on those impressions. So that's something that I would look at first. It's something I usually look at when I get this question. So that would be my recommendation, first of all. With regards to infinite scroll, or kind of this continuous scroll setup that we're trying out, I think it's a little bit tricky, because it's hard to determine what exactly is happening from an SEO point of view. But essentially, from our side, we're still loading the search results in groups of 10, essentially. And as a user scrolls down on the page, we kind of dynamically load the next set of 10 results there. And when that set of 10 results is loaded, that counts as an impression. So that basically means that kind of the scrolling down, and you start seeing page 2 of the search results, that we would see is like, well, this is page 2 now, and it now has impressions, similar to if someone were to just click on page 2 directly in the links. So from that point of view, not much really changes there. What I think will change a little bit is that users will probably scroll a little bit easier to page 2, page 3, or 4. And based on that, the number of impressions that a website can get in the search results will probably go up a little bit. I don't think it'll be like an extreme change, but probably it'll be the case that if you were ranking on page 2, then suddenly your website gets a lot more impressions just because it's easier to reach page 2 in the search results. And the number of clicks, I suspect, will remain similar because like people will kind of like scroll up and down and look at the results on a page, and they'll click on one of them. So probably what will happen is impressions go up a little bit, clicks stay the same. That means the click-through rate tends to go down a little bit. And that if you're focusing purely on click-through rate for SEO, then I suspect that will be a little bit of a kind of, I don't know, weird situation because it's hard to determine, did the click-through rate drop because this page was shown in this continuous scroll environment, or did it drop because users saw it, but they didn't like to click on it as much anymore? So that's, I think, kind of tricky there. One thing that, I don't know, helps a little bit, I think, is we do this continuous scrolling just for the first 4 pages. And then afterwards, you click on kind of the load more or next page. I don't know what exactly it's called. So it's not something that you would see if you're ranking on page 5 or 6, at least not at the moment. I don't, like, nobody knows how these things evolve. And at the moment, it's only for English results in the US. I suspect if they see that this works well for users, they'll roll it out in more countries and more regions. But like, as always, who knows? And it's hard to determine what the timeline there will be. So I think the short version is probably over time, the number of impressions for a lot of these pages will go up a little bit. And at some point, that will stabilize again when people are used to this new UI, when it's rolled out everywhere. But my guess is the click-through rate number, if you're just purely looking at that, that will go down slightly. And if you see that kind of a downward change with the click-through rate, I wouldn't assume that it's something that you're doing wrong with the search results. It might just be that the impressions has gone up.
Right. So for paginated SERPs, like we're used to seeing, you're not necessarily getting an impression for your site if you're ranking on page two until a user clicks onto page two of Google, correct?
Exactly. Yes.
OK, awesome. Thank you so much.
Sure. Mark. Oh, no, I can't hear you. I could hear a buzzing, so something is on.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfect.
All right. Sorry. My question kind of links to Neil's question, and it's about your money, your life. Would you consider texts about energy, energy supply for the household, or telecommunication supply for the household, would you consider them to be part of the your money, your life structure as well?
I don't know. I think for things like this, on the one hand, we don't have this like hard-coded inner algorithms that we try to look out for these specific kinds of pieces of content. So it's not something where we would have an absolute answer. But what I would do is look at the quality rater guidelines and see what kind of sites they're talking about there. And then based on that, try to estimate. But it's also something where you can ask users directly, where you can do like a small user study, or where you could do maybe A/B testing on your website, where you have some of your content with an author, some of it without an author, and you just kind of see like from almost like a natural point of view, do users react differently to this content, and based on that, make your decision.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, Rafael.
Hey, John. So my question is, I have a customer that they have like a very high average response time, 2 seconds to be precisely. And I'm having a very hard time to have buy-in from them to improve that. So I would like to know, how does the average response time impact rankings and search, or improving that, what benefits this website would have for Googlebot or from an SEO point of view? So this is question one. And then question two is on a different subject. That is, another customer, they just redesigned their website. It's still the same CMS and content. And after that, all of our FAQ schemas stopped being displayed in Google search results. And this is 3 months old now, and we still are not there, even everything being passing on the rich results test and inspection tool. So like, what did that happen? And when should I expect to see FAQ being displayed again, or if it will ever be? So thank you.
OK. So average response time, I assume you're looking at the server response time in the crawl stats or things like that?
Yeah, in Google Search Console.
OK. So 2 seconds seems pretty long to me. Usually, I recommend, like we don't have any fixed numbers, but I recommend somewhere along the lines of maximum 200 milliseconds to kind of aim for. And 2 seconds is a lot more than that. What this affects is how quickly we can crawl. So if we want to crawl, I don't know, 100 URLs right now from your website, and we think we can do maybe 5 connections in parallel to your website, then based on that response time, we like those 100 URLs will be spread out, and we won't be able to crawl that much per day. So that's usually the primary effect, that we just don't crawl as much as we could.
And does third-party scripts do you use third-party scripts into consideration and when measuring that, or it's purely my server?
That's purely your server, and that's purely the HTTP requests that we send to your server. So if you have one page that has CSS and images and things like that, the overall loading time, that goes into the Core Web Vitals. But the individual HTTP requests, that goes into the crawl rate.
That answered my question. Thank you so much.
And that doesn't affect the rankings. It's purely just from a technical point of view, how much we can crawl. And the other question, I think, was the FAQ schemas. I think there are two things that might have happened. It's hard to say offhand. One is that we might have reevaluated the quality of your website overall at about the same time that you made those changes. It's probably more of a coincidence if that were the case. But it could be that we kind of like are not that convinced about this website anymore. And if we're not convinced about the website, then usually we don't show any rich results. And that would include the FAQs. So one way to kind of double check that is if you do a site query for these individual pages, do the rich results show up there or not? If they do show up there, then that means technically we can recognize them, but we don't want to show them. So that's kind of a hint that maybe from a quality point of view, you need to improve things. If they don't show up with a site query, then that means more that there's still something technical which is broken with regards to that. So it's not that there's a fixed delay after a restructuring of a website for us to start showing them again. It's more like maybe there was coincidentally weird timing, or maybe there's a technical issue.
Yeah, no, thank you. But I didn't know about this hack. I will try here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not 100% perfect, but it works for a lot of these cases when it comes to rich results. Cool. Let me take a break here with the recording so that we have kind of a shorter recording for the channel. And I can answer more questions afterwards with you all as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, thanks for watching. Feel free to submit more questions on YouTube for the next office hours or join us in person if you'd like to. And with that, let me pause here. Yeah.